Welcome to Living Too Late. My name is Ollie Smith and I'm going to be reading two pages. So today's two pages comes from a book which was... let's turn these levels down. It's getting a bit loud. So, today's book. It's a fairly important book for me. At the time, I remember I was living in Taiwan and I had some, I don't know, they weren't friends that were hippies, but they were very, what's the word, open-minded to different ways of thinking. We weren't terribly concerned about money. We were all training all the time, learning Kung Fu, and we all worked together and we all shared a lot of things, philosophies and different books and things like that. And I'm not sure if this book came from one of them, but it may have done. So this book is called The Art of Loving and it's written by Eric Fromm. Eric Fromm was a renowned psychologist and a social philosopher who emigrated in 1934 to the United States, where he held a private practice and taught at Columbia. Extraordinarily intellectual and clever man. I guess the person I think of today that's current, because he's still going, still alive, is... what's his name? I'll think of his name in a minute. Chomsky. Noam Chomsky is kind of like the equivalent today, heavily intellectual person. And I've tried to read more books by Eric Fromm. They are quite difficult at times to get your head round. But this one's a good one. Yeah, this is... I think the statistic on this book is that it's actually sold more volumes than the Bible. And that's a big thing. But I think it's like 100 and... It's not even 130 pages. And I imagine if the Bible was 130 pages, you'd probably sell more of them. But it's not. And it's very... I don't know if you ever tried reading the Bible. Extremely difficult. Not just because of how ridiculous it is, but trying to get through the wording and how it's written, very tough. I don't need it to be rewritten because it's not really my thing. But so Eric Fromm, an amazing book, The Art of Loving, and I've got a couple of stories about this book. But before I do that, I'm going to read the sort of preface, so it's actually the introduction on the back. The Art of Loving has helped hundreds of thousands of men and women achieve rich, productive lives by developing their hidden capacities for love. An astonishingly frank and candid book by renowned psychoanalyst Eric Fromm. It explores the ways in which this extraordinary emotion can alter the course of one's life. Most of us are unable to develop our ability to love on the only level that really counts. A love that is compounded of maturity, self-knowledge and courage. Learning to love demands practice and concentration, even more than any other art. It demands genuine insight and understanding. In this startling book, Fromm discusses love in all its aspects. Not only romantic love, so surrounded by false conceptions, but also love of parents for children, brotherly love, erotic love, and love for God. So I think, I mean, that's a great introduction. It's an important book, and I think important enough to read the full foreword, and then two pages, and there's a quote in there by, I don't know how to pronounce that name, so... I'll give it a go. Maybe I'll Google it. The reading of this book would be a disappointing experience for anyone who expects easy instruction in the art of loving. This book, on the contrary, wants to show that love is not an easy sentiment which can be easily indulged in by anyone, regardless of the level of maturity reached by him. It wants to convince the reader that all his attempts for love are bound to fail, unless he tries most actively to develop his total personality, so as to achieve a productive orientation. That satisfaction in individual love cannot be attained without the capacity to love one's neighbour, without true humility, courage, faith, and discipline. In a culture in which these qualities are rare, the attainment of the capacity to love must remain a rare achievement, or anyone can ask himself how many truly loving persons he has known. Yet the difficulty of the task must not be a reason to abstain from trying to know the difficulties as well as the conditions for its achievement. To avoid unnecessary complications, I have tried to deal with the problem in a language which is non-technical as far as this is possible. For the same reason, I have also kept to a minimum references to the literature on love. For another problem, I did not find a completely satisfactory solution, that namely of avoiding repetition of ideas expressed in previous books of mine. The reader, familiar especially with Escape from Freedom, Man for Himself, and The Sane Society, will find in this book many ideas expressed in these previous works. However, The Art of Loving is by no means mainly a recapitulation. It presents many ideas beyond the previously expressed ones, and quite naturally, even older ones sometimes gain new perspectives by the fact that they are all centered around one topic, that of the art of loving. Eric Fromm. He who knows nothing loves nothing. He can do nothing, understands nothing. He who understands nothing is worthless. But he who understands also loves, notices, sees. The more knowledge is inherent in a thing, the greater the love. Anyone who imagines that all fruits ripen at the same time as the strawberries knows nothing about grapes. Who is that? Paracelsus? I'm going to have to look it up. Let's Google it. Paracelsus pronunciation. Paracelsus. Yeah, I bet. Paracelsus. Paracelsus, apparently. So I'm going to do my typical two pages. Right, here we go. Chapter 1. Is love an art? Then it requires knowledge and effort. Or is love a pleasant sensation, which to experience is a matter of chance, something one falls into if one is lucky? This little book is based on the former premise, while undoubtedly the majority of people today believe in the latter. Not that people think that love is not important. They are starved for it. They watch endless numbers of films about happy and unhappy love stories. They listen to hundreds of trashy songs about love. Yet hardly anyone thinks that there is anything that needs to be learned about love. This peculiar attitude is based on the several premises which either singly or combined tend to uphold it. Most people see the problem of love primarily as that of being loved rather than that of loving, of one's capacity to love. Hence the problem to them is how to be loved, how to be lovable. In pursuit of this aim, they follow several paths. One which is especially used by men is to be successful, to be as powerful and rich as the social margin of one's position permits. Another, used especially by women, is to make oneself attractive, by cultivating one's body, dress, etc. Other ways of making oneself attractive, used both by men and women, are to develop pleasant manners, interesting conversation, to be helpful, modest, inoffensive. Many of the ways to make oneself lovable are the same as those used to make oneself successful. To win friends and influence people. As a matter of fact, what most people in our culture mean by being lovable is essentially a mixture between being popular and having sex appeal. A second premise behind the attitude that there is nothing to be learned about love is the assumption that the problem of love is the problem of an object, not the problem of a faculty. People think that to love is simple, but that to find the right object to love or to be loved by is difficult. This attitude has several reasons rooted in the development of modern society. One reason is the great change which occurred in the 20th century with the respect to the choice of a love object. In the Victorian age, as in many traditional cultures, love was mostly not a spontaneous personal experience, which then might lead to marriage. On the contrary, marriage was contracted by convention, either by the respective families or by a marriage broker, or without the help of such intermediaries, it was concluded on the basis of social considerations. And love was supposed to develop once the marriage had been concluded. In the last few generations, the concept of romantic love has become almost universal in the Western world. In the United States, while considerations of the conventional nature are not entirely absent, to a vast extent, people are in search of romantic love, of the personal experience of love, which then should lead to marriage. This new concept of freedom in love must have greatly enhanced the importance of the object as against the importance of the function. Closely related to this factor is another feature characteristic of contemporary culture. Our whole culture is based on the appetite for buying, on the idea of a mutually favourable exchange. Modern man's happiness consists in the thrill of looking at the shop windows and in buying all that he can afford to buy, either for cash or on instalments. He or she looks at people in a similar way. For the man, an attractive girl, and for a woman, an attractive man, are the prizes that they are after. Attractive usually means a nice package of qualities which are popular and sought after on the personality market. What specifically makes a person attractive depends on the fashion of the time, physically as well as mentally. During the 20s, a drinking and smoking girl, tough and sexy, was attractive. Today, the fashion demands more domesticity and coyness. At the time of the 19th and the beginning of this century, a man had to be aggressive and ambitious. Today, he has to be social and tolerant in order to be an attractive package. At any rate, the sense of falling in love develops usually only with regard to such human commodities as are within reach of one's own possibilities for exchange. I am out for a bargain. The object should be desirable from the standpoint of its social value, and at the same time should want me, considering my overt and hidden assets and potentialities. Two persons thus fall in love when they feel they have found the best object available on the market. Considering the limitations of their own exchange values, often, as in buying real estate, the hidden potentialities which can be developed play a considerable role in this bargain. In a culture in which the marketing orientation prevails, and in which material success is the outstanding value, there is little reason to be surprised that human love relations follow the same pattern of exchange which governs the commodity and the labour market. The third error leading to the assumption that there is nothing to be learned about love lies in the confusion between the initial experience of falling in love and the permanent state of being in love, or as we might better say, of standing in love. If two people who have been strangers, as all of us are, suddenly let the wall between them break down and feel close, feel one, this moment of oneness is one of the most exhilarating most exciting experiences in life. So that's concluded the first two pages, and yes, I confess, to be honest, it was slightly more than two pages. I did read the back of this book. I did read the introduction by Eric Fromm, and I did read, well, the first page was literally a half a page. So I read two, and I guess the first page was half, and then I read two pages, and then probably another half, so it's like three pages. I'm still learning to how to better introduce this material. Obviously there's better parts of any book, but I don't know, this is kind of what I really wanted to do was introduce these books on a kind of like an unboxing, so you kind of, you get to, if you didn't know this book, like maybe you know this book and you, I don't know why you'd be listening to this, you know, me rabbiting on about it, but any of these books that I pick up and I read two pages of, the idea is that you've not known about these books before. So I'm trying to just introduce something that I think is valuable. I'm not a big reader, and I don't really have the intellect to decide what's a good book or a bad book. There are books that I'm into, and I don't pick them up unless I think I'll be interested in it. Luckily enough, I've got some very good friends who are, or one in particular, really. Actually, only one friend actually ever gives me a book, and I share books with. And he has a lot of time to be able to read books, and he tends to pass good books on to me, and I trust him because he's got that he's got some life experience, and he's intelligent, and it doesn't really come down to education, but so anyway, my experience of The Art of Loving was, I guess, I'm not sure why, I think, I don't really remember why I picked it up, but I think it's an interesting subject, you know, because I've often been confused why things are the way they are. That, you know, Eric Fromm was, you know, even picking up on these first couple of pages, you're beginning to see a deconstruction on the way most people think, even today. Let me try and find a date for you on this book. They're usually in here, right? Publication date. I don't see it anyway. Come on. So I mean, this has got a date on it, 1974. That sounds about right. And things haven't really changed that much in terms of how socially how we work, and in terms of how we, and even how we think about love. And I was very interested in understanding that, and I wanted it to be deconstructive for me, and I wanted to understand about different types of love, and how, not, it wasn't, I wasn't looking for self-help, I was looking for an explanation, because I found it so odd the way people were carrying on socially, and it always seemed to be about finding that partner, whether it was for a brief amount of time or a longer relationship. I just found it really odd the way people behaved, and some of my friends at the time didn't care at all in the slightest about these things, and I don't think they even loved themselves. So they were on this sort of self-destructive path, or they were on self-destructive paths to go out into the world and find as many, some of those that physical love. How does he phrase it on the back of this book? I think different types of loves. Where did he mention it? Let me try and find where he mentioned it. And he describes the different types of loves. Oh, come on, where is it? Let's try the first paragraph. Was it the first paragraph? God, that's my problem. I cannot remember things. And I can't reiterate that.
Even though I've just read it. Come on, man.
Romantic love. Where did he just read that? God, have I got to read it again? Jesus. Right, it's not on the back. I think I've got to read the whole thing again. Jesus. Domestic one's love, a neighbour, true humanity, courage, faith, and discipline, capacity of love, deal with the problem of language, blah blah blah, solutions. No, it's not in there. I do like that quote though. Very good quote. Come on. I can't bloody find it. I've only read three pages. No, I can't find it. I'm sure I just read that. He describes the different types of loves. Well, they're in the contents of this book. So you've got brotherly love, motherly love, erotic love, self-love, and love of God. I think if you even have a little bit of all of those, I don't know what I'm trying to say. So if you even got a little bit of any of those, a bit of all of them in equal doses, that's healthy, right? So this is what I remember understanding about brotherly, motherly, erotic self, and love of God. To me, brotherly love is sort of unconditional love for your fellow human beings, right? So it's the reason why we say hello to each other in passing, or help each other out for no reward. You know, it's kind of it's checking to see how people are. I struggle. I'm not perfect, and I struggle with this brotherly love, because even though it's something that I really believed in naturally, I never studied it. It's something I had always done, and I found that a lot of people take advantage of that brotherly love, and I think it comes down to kindness as well. So people tend to take advantage of that kindness, and then because they have their own issues, they can't return it, or they just take it and use it for their own gains, and that's troubling. Motherly love is an interesting thing. So that's the protecting love, right? I'm not sure why they don't talk about fatherly love. So, motherly love, I wonder if it'll give you... Yeah, so on motherly love, and I think it's important to point out that there is also fatherly love, and... there definitely needs to be an understanding of that. The motherly love, I mean, I might talk about this a bit more once I read more of this book, but that might not happen. But fatherly and motherly love, and deconstructing it, is a fascinating thing. I mean, it's amazing. It doesn't mean motherly love can only come from a woman and from mothers. And I didn't realise that in the beginning. Fatherly love can't or doesn't just have to come from men and from fathers. So if you look at... I mean, you can actually see motherly centred love and who it came from. Yes, so that's motherly and fatherly centred love. And it's a, I highly recommend anybody... really, to pick up this book. And that leads me to one of my first stories. Actually, I'll do it chronologically, my experience of this book and having read it. I had a friend in Taiwan that was helping me out with that erotic love section, page 49, if you're looking it up in The Art of Loving. And I was surprised to see it. There were some things I absolutely adored about this person, and one of them was that they had a bookshelf full of different types of fairly intellectual reading material, and I kind of liked that. It wasn't until I started to get a better understanding of this person, and I realised that she was relying on reading material as a sort of self-help. I noticed, you know, notice a magazine, and I pick it up on a dining room table, and it's like it's like a magazine, and on the front page and the title is "Key to a Healthier, Better, Happier Life," and it's like they're, you know, in extra acrylic bold font on the front cover is yoga and sex and chocolate or something like that, you know, and it's kind of like their take on happier life. She was always going on about, I think, how to be happier. So one of the books I found on their bookshelf was The Art of Loving, and I was curious. I just thought, you know, because I remember it kind of reminded me of some words written on a book that I read once, and they suggested that this, you know, the book is not a self-help guide, and, you know, there's no point turning to the back of the book to find all the answers. And that kind of, I just thought, I know what's going on. This person is struggling, and they're trying to find answers, and they had no one really guiding them, no one to give them help, and they weren't asking for help. They were just kind of feeling it out, I guess. And I picked up their copy of The Art of Loving, and it was pristine. It was as if it had never been opened. And I just flicked through it, and I noticed that the pages of the last chapter were worn, and they hadn't, I don't think they had actually read the book. They'd read the last chapter, which summarizes the book. It doesn't really summarize the book. What is the last chapter? The Practice of Love. So unless they were using it as some kind of pickup artist game, where it's kind of, I kind of forget the last chapter at the moment. I can't recall it, but I'll have to read it again. And it sounds like you might be able to glean how to practice it, which is then using it like a self-help book. I hate that. That's one experience of the book. And the other story is, again, related to a woman. And this book, when I was dating my now wife, and I recommended this book to her. And the way I put it to her was, it was meant in a sharing, kind way. And I said, "You've got to read this book." It's a great book. And I bought her a copy of it. And I noticed that she wasn't interested in it at all. And I bugged her for months about not reading this book. And then I eventually gave up. The book is still on our bookshelf. Her copy. I've got my copy. Her copy is still on the bookshelf. And it still hasn't been read. And I just recall her saying at one point, when I was like freaking out about it and getting ridiculous, and she said, because she came out with, "I'll never read that book." And I said, "Why? Why on earth wouldn't you read it?" And she said, "Because you told me to read it." I didn't mean it that way. And I think I tried to explain to her, I didn't mean it like you need to read it. You read that book. Didn't mean it like that. I meant you should read the book. That's in, this is a I think this is a great book. You'll enjoy it. But, bashing the mic. So it's one of those things that you kind of have to let go. And I've noticed, actually, with my wife, is that she never reads books. Like, never, ever, ever reads books. Like, no books. There are no books that she's ever read. And it's even to the point, and I suddenly realised this only the other day, and we've got two young children who are not 10, let's just say that. These are young children, and I said to her, "Hey, you've never read a book to those children. Like, never, ever. In the years that we've had them, you've never read a book to them." And she didn't know what to say. I said, it's terrible not reading your children books. So it's down to me. So that's what I've been doing since the beginning. And still doing. And I don't know, I'm just going to try and guilt trip her into reading books to the kids, which is what she does to me about every other thing in our lives. Anyway, I'm going to leave it there. This has been Two Pages and The Art of Loving. Join me in the next episode. Thanks for listening.